5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
5 years and my life is still done to get a bad creepy healer of hope for a destination.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, 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 good evening, one and all. It is, I don't know what date it is, the 13th of May, 21, and it's episode 233 of the new Panic Room, and it probably means it's Thursday then again. And I'm pretty damn sure we only had a Thursday, so like last week. But yeah, they say time flies when you're having fun. I'm not sure about the second part of that, quite sure. The time really is flying, but the one bonus I have in all of this is it means it doesn't take too long before I get to speak to Xtina again, and I'm going to bring her on.
Oh my goodness, I think every single week we say, where did the week go? And really, Monday happened. Monday happened, and the next thing I know it, here we are. And I had so many things, you know, to be honest, I did get a lot accomplished this week, but at the same time there was so much more I had on my list that I was like I got plenty of time, and now I'm like, freak, what happened to the week? So, you know, there we are.
Oh, I know. Absolutely. Totally understand. Yes.
I'm just so glad tomorrow's Friday, because, we need the weekend. We do. We definitely need the weekend.
The problem with weekends is that they're only 2 days. I mean, whose stupid idea was that?
I know. We should definitely
We should reverse it. We should have a 2-day week and a 5-day weekend. Now that would be good. That would be
We'd still moan. Some reason. But it doesn't, you have the first day off, and for us it's one of those days where you just get some running done, you do some things that you couldn't do while you're working all week, and then Sunday comes around and you kind of recover, and then you just gotta go back and do it all over again, and I want to cry now.
Really depressed now. So that's great.
It's not that bad. It's not as bad as it sounds. So we have jobs, so that's the one good thing. We are still working and still are busy all the time, and a lot of people aren't, so we have to count our blessings, right? That's what they tell us.
I'm not convinced, to be honest. No, you're right. Just, I don't know. But anyway, in other news, I suppose it goes along with the only in Texas sort of vibe is literally not far from here, not far from where I'm sitting here right now. There's actually a tiger on the loose. Yeah, absolutely, Houston. Somebody's pet tiger had got out and was robbed.
There's
pictures of this fucking tiger just walking around the suburbs. It's like, what?
Yeah.
I know. It's just like, apparently somebody just turned up in a truck or something and just it jumped in the truck and off they went. It's like, what? You know, somebody's pet tiger.
Yeah. You know, you play that clip for me every week, the dueling banjos, and it is pretty funny. We have the Nextdoor app thing, you know, on our phones and,
yes,
and stuff, and every so often we'll get a you know, there's an update that there's a cow loose. You know, get your cow, whoever, yeah, you know, the cow's running loose, and it's just it's cute. I know. But
that's,
you know, the whole tiger thing, it reminds me, I read an article earlier today. There's some happenings over there with Chernobyl. Did you read this?
Like, no.
You know, I'll have to send you the news article. And I
could
be awful to explain. Yeah, definitely. I read it. I would be awful to try to explain it just because, you know, I should have been a blonde. But yeah, there's like some stuff going on over there in Chernobyl. And I'm like, you know, I don't know. It's just like the whole Jumanji thing. Like somebody's still playing the game and that we haven't gotten, you know, we don't know who it is. So we can't really interfere or intervene or anything.
Yeah.
So what's happening
in Chernobyl? What is that? What's going on?
Oh, you're going to make me find it now and everything. I shared it with, like, you know, everybody I could think of. I saw it this morning and I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah, there's something to do with, you know, they built that thing over the reactor or whatever to try to keep it contained.
Yep.
Well, I guess there's rain that's been leaking onto it the whole time that kind of kept it cool, but it's not doing that now. So it's starting to heat back up. And they did say that it's cause for concern, but not alarm. I don't know the difference, but, you know, I mean, I would be alarmed and concerned.
Yeah, both.
Yeah, here
we go. That is
frightening
because that whole thing was, yeah.
Here we go.
If that gets out of control again, that's going to be awful.
Yeah. Nuclear reactions at Chernobyl are spiking in an inaccessible chamber. That was the headline. So cool.
Wow.
Cool. And not really, but oh my gosh. Yeah, so I'm thinking, definitely, it's like I said, it's Jumanji or something. You know, something is definitely going on.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the exciting news I had. So, you know, and I have to stop. I do this in the morning. Instead of my, you know, cup of coffee, I read, you know, headlines. I should stop doing that. I should just stop because, you know, I'm going to develop, like, anxiety or have to take medication or something. It's I wish I could make that up, but, I watched, I think you did, too, watch what was it? The TV show, not TV show, but the miniseries or whatever on Chernobyl a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, well, it was me that told you had to watch it, yeah.
Yes.
That was really, really well done. I mean, we lived through it. We, from our perspective,
mm-hmm,
from what the West did find out, that the biggest worry was that it was such a big cover-up, you know?
Yeah. I watched it twice, and I have to say, you know, the first time you watch it, it's heavy. And it does mm-hmm. not get any better the second time around. I thought it would. I'm like, you know, I saw it, so I'm prepared. And no, it was just as it's heavy. It is. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I thought, but it's definitely not one of those ones that let's sit down and watch Chernobyl because it's gonna mess you up for a little bit. So
mm-hmm. absolutely. Yeah.
I hope.
But knowing that it's still, the way it left it, it's still there, it's still going on. Reactions are still obviously still going on in the core. They buried the whole thing under a bunch of concrete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's that
and,
thing that they call
not...
the thing that they call the elephant's foot, which is a lump of melted stuff, radioactive. That apparently it's the most radioactive point on the planet, and they call it the elephant's claw because that's what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Look it up, and it is, and they just can't do anything with it. I mean, it's going to be lethal to go anywhere near it for hundreds of thousands of years, and they say if that decided to melt downwards, then there'd be all sorts of problems.
Yeah, so yikes, it's scary, and
not quite as terrifying as a tiger on the loose in a Houston suburb.
You know, there is something to that. Yeah, that's true.
But then again, who doesn't love fluffy tigers? You know, they're awesome.
They are. Like,
she's about 9 months old now. She's on her first cycle.
We're dealing
with that right now. It's just like, oh, all our other dogs are boys, and all the other dogs are boys. She's out our little bitch. But and she it's funny. She's moody. She's grumpy. She gets a bit slutty around our shepherd mix because he's not been fixed either, so I have to keep a close eye on both of them. But it's funny because literally rubbing his face in it, and I mean literally, and he's terrified. He just leaps up with this look on his face like, what the? It's like he comes running up, like, help me, because she's running after him. I was slutty puppy. But now the thing you're supposed to, the best time to get them fixed is about a couple of months after their first cycle and before their second. So we'll get through this and then she's off to the vet.
Yeah, poor puppy though.
She's an extra cuddly, and she needs love and needs cuddles and that. So she's still my little sweetheart. So I understand we have it's poetry night tonight on the new Panic Room.
It is.
I don't actually remember agreeing to that, to be honest.
That's true. You did not. I finagled that on my own. But, we just re-released Dark Musings with a brand new cover and a few, material that's never been read before. And I thought, what better way to celebrate it than to have a poetry night? And we have two amazing poets. Well, I guess three, because I'm there too. But we have like amazing poets tonight, and we're going to sit around and talk poetry. And hopefully they brought some wine. We can sit back and sip some wine and be all refined and talk poetry. Isn't that fun, awesome?
I think you're right. I think wine and poetry just go together. Absolutely. So I think we should you should introduce them, then we'll bring them on.
All righty. Tonight, the Panic Room celebrates poetry with, and I lost my place here, Bram Stoker Award-winning poetry author Sarah Tantlinger, and we have poet M. Enenbach. Woo! Yay!
Yay! Hello.
Uh-oh. Hello. Maybe we don't. Oh, there they
yeah,
are.
Maybe it's just like, seeing, hey, guys, how you doing?
Hi, can you hear me?
There we go.
We can. We've got Sarah and we've got Em. thank you for joining us, guys.
Thank you for having us.
I'm wondering if we have some kind of a weird lag going on here, but yes, I'm super excited. I believe it was Jeff Strand who told me that I needed to get Sarah on the show when with poetry, and I thought, how cool is that? And so then I went and I stalked her and I begged her, and she was like, fine, you know. So I'm excited to talk poetry, and this is a question I think that anybody who writes poetry probably gets, but who are your favorite poets? What poets do you like and do you read?
So for me, I'm a big fan, of course, Edgar Allan Poe is the obvious answer, but also mm-hmm. William Blake and Sylvia Plath for classics. And then more contemporary, Linda Addison is amazing. And Sierra de Mulder, those are probably two of my favorite contemporary poets. And then there's just so many amazing poets in the horror community.
I have to say that I was never one to read poetry. And I think that the huge reason, the biggest reason for me was a lot of it is free verse, and I just did not get free verse for a really long time. I mean, with Edgar Allan Poe, you got, a lot of rhyming, and I love that, and that's what I did for a long time was the rhyming. So when it came to anything else, I was just like, I just don't get it, And then I had a poet friend, who wrote free verse, and I read it. I think she had sent out the advanced reader copies, and I read it, and I was like, wow, I really connected with it. And it was then on, I was like, I have to, I guess, see if I can try that. And I did, and I never looked back, and James gives me crap about it all the time because he's like, it doesn't rhyme.
Well, exactly, yeah. Poetry's supposed to rhyme. You know it does.
It can, yeah, and that's something, too. What style of poetry do you write in, Sarah?
I don't rhyme very often. Every once in a while I will, or I'll do like a villanelle or something because I like the rhyme scheme in those, but I'm a big fan of the free verse, I gotta say. I like reading rhyming poetry, but writing it, sometimes I just feel so hokey, like if you don't do the rhymes really well, they come across kind of like Dr. Seuss. Yeah.
No, it's very true that you say that. I mean, my first three books that I published were rhyming. They were, a poetic narrative. And I do know that it's challenging. It's more challenging, I think, than you realize it is, because if you don't mm-hmm. want to sound hokey, there's times that I wanted to convey an idea, and I'm like, man, there's nothing I can get that rhymes with that. And so you'd have to play with the sentence a little bit and change it a little around to still convey the same thing. But then when I did discover free verse, and that's what I actually called my first, the first book that I put out that was not rhyming, without the confines of my rhymes, because it was so freeing, and I think that is definitely why I've stuck with it, And I have some people that will say, they miss the rhymes and stuff, and I don't yet, I mean, I'm having so much fun with the free verse. It's just, and you say anything goes, but that's not quite true, because there's still, I think, with good poetry, even if it's not rhyming, it still has a flow, it does, and so
absolutely, yeah. And I admire people that can rhyme well and do it a lot, because I think it's really challenging, for sure.
So Sarah, you are here to talk to us about your Stoker nominated collection, Cradleland of Parasites. Tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. So I got this idea to write a poetry collection inspired by the Black Death in 2019, and I started it, and then 2020 happened, and I was like, oh, okay. It was very strange. Yeah, it was so strange promoting this book during 2020 because, you know, I've been researching plagues and pandemics for the past so many months. It's been a very weird experience.
Yeah, I can imagine, but maybe you're the one who started this whole, you're the one playing Jumanji, and maybe, you know, you have to write some good, now you have to go back and write some really nice, like, flowers and unicorns, and to write this, that to make me, you know, you can write them wrong.
I guess so, a little too prophetic for me.
right, and, you know, I was wondering, it's definitely dark with it being inspired by the Black Death. Do you always write dark poetry, or do you ever, is it ever lighter?
No, not really. I love horror. I'm just such a big horror fan. Everything I write tends to be horror. And I think horror poetry is obviously pretty niche, but I think it's a really exciting time to be writing horror poetry. I've seen a lot of good collections and new poets, and it's just really exciting to see what people do. And then I just love the combination of taking something like poetry, people think it's supposed to be beautiful or sad, but when you add horror into it, you can do anything. You can really push the boundaries with that. And that's really my favorite thing about horror, is just pushing those boundaries. So combining it with poetry just really lets your creativity go any direction that you want to challenge yourself to go in.
I definitely agree. With the book that I'm celebrating right now is the first one that I put out, and it was very dark, but I was going through a very dark phase in my life. And when I kind of got out of that situation, my poetry changed, and I didn't think it was as moving as the darkness was. I mean, a lot of people said it was, just it was different. But at the same time, I just felt like my spark went out. Just not even the right word. Maybe my fire, you know. And it became a challenge to kind of, you know, delve into the darkness without being in it. And it took me a while, but I think I finally accomplished it. So I was like, yeah, I'm excited now. I can give people the creeps again, and, you know, instead of, you know. Because I do. I love the horror as well, and to be scared. And although I am a big scaredy cat, I mean, I will admit that, you know. But
I think we're often afraid of everything.
do you know, I'm glad that you said that, because we have, you know, often we have horror writers come on the show, and they just seem so mean and scary themselves. Well, I mean, they're sweethearts, but then nothing scares them. And, you know, we sometimes get on the topic of ghosts and stuff, and they're like, oh, I'd love to see a ghost. I'd love to. You know what? Not me. I'm going to put that out for any spirit that could be listening right now. Please. No, not me. You know, I mean, I'm such a scaredy cat that if I get up in the middle of the night and say I've watched a scary movie, like before bed, I get up in the middle of the night to pee or something, and I'll start getting scared that there's a ghost, or there's a spirit, there's a demon or something. And then I'm like, okay, don't look at it. Just pretend like you don't know anything's going on. It'll leave you alone. So it's totally in my mind, you know, but I can freak myself out. It's awful. I have no business watching scary movies. I don't. Someone should, like, not allow me to. Yeah. It's bad, but it's still
okay.
I think that might be why we like it so much, is it does scare us, and it's also kind of safe, you know, except for when you think that, you know, there's a killer in your shower. It's not so safe then, but know.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Horror really lets us view all that scary stuff from the safe place. So it's kind of like a weird voyeurism that we get to experience through horror.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Sarah, I want to hear more of your poetry. Do you have an excerpt to share with us?
Yeah. I have a short one that I can read here.
Okay.
So this poem was inspired by some of my research where I was researching the weird ways that in medieval times they tried to cure the plague because they obviously didn't have our science. So this is based on real life ways that they tried to cure each other. This is called
awesome.
Preventative Measures. Dissolve opium in brandy. Wear protective amulets beneath the armpit. Smoke tobacco. Eat lettuce. Provide alcohol and opium brews even for the children. Drink fine wine. Pray to God. If feeling ill, take a chicken, pluck it clean, apply live chicken to swollen nodes. Animal will absorb sickness. Repeat until chicken or patient dies. Sit next to hot fire. Sweat out illness. Disease will travel in air to nearest sewage area. For swelling and boils, apply paste of gum resin, roots of white lilies, and dried excrement. You might also seek out ground unicorn horn, crushed emeralds. Do not substitute with mercury or arsenic. And that is Preventative Measures.
I love it.
Awesome.
I think
that sounds
I want
great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tell you something, it actually sounds better than these COVID vaccines they're dishing out, to be
Thank
honest.
Thank you. I was going to say, we should try all of those things, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the ground unicorn horn.
The brandy and the new chickens. I mean, that really does it for me, definitely.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I think we should like print it out and like, you know, put it in like in the doctor's offices and stuff, and you know, that would be awesome.
That would go over great.
But how much fun was that? I mean, that sounded like so much fun to do the research. You know, I mean,
yeah.
The other poetry that you write, is it usually theme-based or, you know, this was, you know, just for the, inspired by the Black Death, but do you always have themes that you go with or?
I do like themes. My collection, that one, The Stoker, was inspired by serial killer H.H. Holmes. That's called The Devil's Dreamland, and it goes in like a narrative arc kind of through his life and through the perspectives of his victims. And then my other poetry collection, Love for Slaughter, is kind of inspired by, I call it horror-mance. It's like a horror romance, lust obsession kind of collection.
Nice. I do like the idea. I really do. I don't know if I, like, you know, how many poems do you need to do a collection with a subject that like that. I mean, yeah, that would be a lot of fun. I just, for me, I don't know. It's not usually something I could make happen. There are times I sit there and I'm like, oh, I feel the itch to write something. And, but like, I feel like I have no inspiration or like nothing comes. And, you know, there are times that I belong to a couple of groups on Facebook and they have, daily writing prompts that I go in there and sometimes that helps jumpstart something. But I'll finish one of those and it's almost like I've done my due diligence for the day, so I'm fine. But inside I'm like, I really haven't, and I need something, you know, I need something. And and another interesting thing I find is there will be times that I'll have this idea and this is what I want to write. This is what the idea for this poem is. And I will start it and then it will completely change direction And even I'm like, what just happened there? And then I'm like, I still want to write the one I wanted to write, but I like this one too. So it's just really weird. So, and that's why I've said before, I think a lot of our ideas, especially our poetry ideas, they don't come from within. You know, I almost feel like we are channeling it somehow, you know? Either one of you felt like that before? Yeah. How about you? Do you feel like that as well? That you're just channeling the stuff out there, or is that coming from within you?
I have absolutely no idea. I don't think when I do it.
I like that idea. I have no idea. It just comes to me. So yeah, it does almost, you know, sound like it. You're like a beacon, maybe. I like that idea. If anybody can see me, I have my like hands up in the air, like I'm like, you know, beaconing something. But yeah, I do find it interesting to find out where people get their inspiration or what compels them to write poetry. And the volume that you put out, as far as like daily, I just, I'm in awe. I mean, how do you do it? I mean, do you ever get to where the ideas are coming so fastly? It's hard to keep up with them.
In the worst moments, I've written 12 to 15 just right in a row.
Oh my cow! Wow. It's I mean, there were days that I push for one, and then I'll have a dry spell for a couple of weeks, and that's you know, it is sad because when you I think that for poetry, it's kind of something that I had a poet friend that, you know, she's like, this is what I bleed, you know, poetry is what I bleed. And that's kind of the same thing. You know, I have this, something that is bothering me or I have this thought, and if I can get it out, usually I'm free from it then, you know, I'm like, okay, I got it on the paper. It's gone now. And, oh, to put out that many, especially as fast as you do, I would just think that it was a very, very loud in your head. I would like to take a tour sometime.
Oh God, no, that sounds absolutely horrific.
Well, you know, from a safe distance, I think it would be okay.
I don't know if there's a safe distance.
And one of the same questions for you, Em, as I asked Sarah, do you just write like the more dark poetry, or do you have lighter poems as well?
I don't really have an intent normally. I don't know what they're going to be until they're done. I find that ugliness is more beautiful sometimes, so I know I tend towards the uglier side of emotions because I think people can resonate. People understand a shitty day. They don't understand being in love.
You know, that's, yeah. And I think that the more ugly, I guess, the more raw it is, the more real. I definitely, and that's true. Yeah. I guess I never really thought of it like that. And I think that might be why, like, you know, I put Dark Musings out and it was really dark, and people they loved it. And then I had all of these other poems that weren't dark. And there was, when I went through them, I'm like, wow, there's enough here to, you know, to put out a whole other book. And it'll be light musings instead of dark musings. And I read that occasionally, and I feel like it's not as strong as the darkness. But I guess it is just in a different way, you know? I mean, I don't know. I was talking to somebody about it one time, and I'm like, I sometimes feel like, you know, how you you talk about your kids and you would never ever admit to having a favorite, and I don't have a favorite kid. They think I do, but I really don't.
Yeah, you do.
So it's like, you
yeah,
know.
You do.
No, I.
Yeah, you do.
I love them both equally.
You know, I tell my children that too.
Actually, I used to tell my daughter that she was my favorite daughter, and I would tell my son he's my favorite son. And when they were younger, they bought that. They didn't argue anymore. But now that they're older, it doesn't fly as well. But I don't know. I think that go ahead.
I'm light and dark. What I have noticed, especially I'm at like 4,950 poems, so I've got a pretty good baseline going. People can commiserate when you're sad, but they don't tend to want to celebrate when you're happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like we need better friends.
No, I do understand, especially if they're not in a good place. I mean, if you hand a love poem over to your friend who is in a good place, you know, within herself, or if she's in a, you know, a great relationship, she's going to read that and be like, yeah, this is really good. But say she's not, she's going to read that and go, yeah, whatever. You know what I mean? So, yeah, but then again, it's, how many times, even if you're having a great day, you know, not every single thing has gone well. So you read a poem that's real, and it talks about real things that you could be going through. I think it definitely probably touches a wider audience. I do. And one of the same questions for you, Em, that I asked Sarah, and I have read a couple of your books, so you do kind of experiment with the different styles of poetry, but what would you say is your favorite style of poetry to write in?
Oh, God. I guess it's got to be freestyle. Mm-hmm. I like to use a little bit of rhyming and a little bit of alliteration because I feel it helps control the flow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I find rhyming to be way too constricting.
You know, I don't disagree at all. And there was a time that I would have argued probably because that's all I wrote was rhyming. And I don't think that I really don't think it what I did with my poetry sounded hokey. I don't. But it definitely it limits you. It really does. And when I started doing free verse, I was just like, wow. And it took me a while. Sometimes I'll have on a Facebook pop-up a memory of a couple of years ago when I first tried free verse. Think about, you're rhyming for years. That's all you do is rhyme. And then you're like, let me try this. I mean, it's definitely not as easy as it sounds, especially, first. So, some of the earlier ones will pop up and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I let people see that. And it still, gives me, I'm still like, oh, that was really cute. That was really sweet. But at the same time, I'm like, oh my God, it's, I definitely see a growth, I guess, in my own work. And that's something too, for both of you. I don't know how to explain it or how to ask this, but do you ever, research the different kinds of poetry out there and try for something that you're not familiar with or, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely researched. I mean, I studied literature. I have a master's in writing, too. So, I had to study all the classic ways to write. If I really wanted to, I could sit down and do it. But I just don't always, I don't always want to do my trochees and my iambs and stuff. But I think it's really good to just know and read the classics, just to have that in the back of your mind. I think it's just helpful. Mm-hmm. And it's always good that you can go on the computer or get a book and find a new way to challenge yourself. Like if you've never written a haiku, that's a great way to just do a little form challenge.
Yeah, I agree. I went to, I don't remember what the website was, but it listed 50 some odd different styles of poems and gave examples. And I think I ran through every one of them, just trying them out to have a feel for it.
Mm-hmm. I remember the poems with lists of yours, and there was one there that, I'm probably going to get these two confused, but there was one that we pretty much counted backwards from, like, the end of a relationship all the way to the beginning. And when I got to the beginning, I just was like, I wanted to cry just because I think I knew the end. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, my gosh, it was great. I loved that one. And then there was another one of yours that was in a list form, and it was pretty much a relationship, but the pieces weren't all together. Like, it, you know, I don't know. You probably know better than I do, but it was interesting. I really enjoyed that. And there's very few right now, I think, especially when we have the, you know, Facebook land and all of, you know, Twitter land and stuff like that. I think we have seen an influx of poets come out of the woodwork, and there are very few that I read that I aspire to be like. And I can actually say that, you know, Em, you're one of them. I've read some of yours that just, I will turn to the person sitting next to me and just be like, you have to read this. And of course, if they're not poetry people, they're like, I don't get it. I'm like, so I'm like, oh God, you know, it just, you know, makes me want to just be like, read it again then, you know, until you do. So,
well, I appreciate those kind words. On the list one, there was a trend where everybody was writing poems as lists, and I just thought it was so lazy, so I decided that if I was going to do it, I wanted to do it my way.
And you did it great. I really enjoyed those. I did. On that note, we need to take a quick break. We're going to play
James
a little song and have a little commercial. Yes,
yes,
James
I
has
do.
To pee. So don't go anywhere, and we'll be right back.
Will we now? What if
you're supposed to push the button.
No. What if I didn't want to wee? You see, just making broad assumptions there that I might need to wee. But although oddly enough.
Watch out for tigers.
Yeah. You know, that was a real thing. Don't mock that one.
I saw that news story.
The cops came to get the guy, and he let the tiger loose so he could run away. It's the most Houston thing ever.
Yeah, I mean, bearing in mind, it was not too far from here. It's not far from where I am, and that's kind of scary when you think about it. But okay. Anyway, sorry, I'm not just off on a tangent there. Yeah, we will be right back.
Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books, purveyor of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, www.jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room Radio on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit us at our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
welcome back indeed. And hopefully Xtina's got a whole new box of wine on the go. And now I've had my wee, so we're good for our second half.
Yeah, I took a sip and I was like, ah, and then I unmuted myself, so I spared you guys that.
I made a mistake and I poured the wine in the toilet and I took a sip of pee.
Oh, man, don't you hate when that happens?
I didn't know what to do.
There are some people who pay good money to do that, so, don't know.
That's true. There's like a fetish for every single thing. Anything you can think of, there's like a weird fetish for. And, I am not one to kink shame. So, I'll just say not my kink, but, you do you.
I mean, well, understand that it's terrible to drink one.
That's a kink all in itself.
I was at the drugstore recently, and they had this it was supposed to be like a gift for dad for Father's Day, and it was a mug, and it had, they used to have the baby bottles that would have the fake, milk in it or whatever, and you'd pour it up and stuff. Well, anyway, it was kind of like that, but it was in a mug, and it was supposed to be beer, but it looked like straight up piss. I mean, it was like, I know what beer looks like. This just, that looks like piss, and I don't know why anyone would have bought it, so...
You know what would have been the ideal Father's Day gift? And if my kids are listening, I hope they're taking notes. I think a prostitute. Or even a voucher. Hooker voucher, for dad for Father's Day.
Wait a minute, can you get vouchers?
A little coupon,
Maybe. Maybe. I'm just guessing. I'm just pure conjecture on my part, but... If you can, and my kids are listening, then, gift ideas. No more chocolate this year, I'll lose a bit of weight. And so your hooker voucher for me this year, hopefully. That's what I'm pinning my hopes on.
speaking of, not Father's Day, of course, because it hasn't happened yet and I'm not a father, but I had a lovely Mother's Day. I just wanted to say that if anybody, my kids are both sleeping, but, I did. I had a wonderful Mother's Day and my kids were great to me and the boyfriend was amazing and it just felt like, I was treated like a queen. I was, which I have to say, it kind of, it paled a teeny tiny bit to my birthday last year, which I think I pretty much had a birthday the whole entire, month of July. So, that's going to be pretty hard to beat. I will, say that, but, we can set new records. We can try, right?
Definitely.
I mean, as long as you get a dream.
So, Em, you are here to talk to us about your, is it the upcoming book or is it out yet?
I just had two chapbooks released on Potter's Grove Press website exclusively.
Now, I am not entirely sure what a chapbook is. Like, I don't know. So, tell us what that is.
From everything that I read about it, it's a 30 pages or so. It comes from the early schooling. They would give the books out as chapters, so they called them chapter books, and it got shortened down to chapbooks, and now it's just a shorter collection.
Ah, okay. Who knew? I did not know that. I guess you learn something new every day, and thank you for that, because I really did not know. Yeah, and it's called Uncollected. Is that right?
Yeah, Uncollected volumes 1 and 2 are out now, and then 3 or 4 are coming out later on this year.
Now, yours are all pretty much different. And that's, I think, one of the cool things when I was reading, any work by you is that you never know what you're going to get when you turn the page, and, that's kind of cool. And I think you've said yourself, you don't really know. It just kind of comes out. It just kind of pours out. And, I've tried that. And the few times that I have kind of let myself go, I end up with something amazing. And then there are times that I try too hard. And you get done and you're like, it's all right. but it's the times that I just let myself go, which, I don't know, how do you do it? Because, I've only been able to do that a very few times where I just kind of, like, let's see what happens. And then it's almost like automatic writing, which is kind of spooky. But, that's kind of how I would explain it sometimes.
I would say that's 99% of what I do. I if anything, I have an image or I have one word that's just seems like I'm going to base something on it. Next thing I know, 10 minutes later, I've got a poem.
my aunt, who is probably my biggest fan, she asked me one time, how long it took me to write a poem. And, to be honest, the ones that I think are my best poetry are probably the ones that I sit down and just rattle off. I mean, like, they're really fast. They seem to come without really thinking about it too much. It's the ones that I have like for the prompts, those ones that I have to, do something, that they give me a picture or a word. Those are the ones that seem to take a little longer, that I can sit there and really struggle over. So, do you guys feel it the same way?
I think the poetic part of the brain and the logical side of the brain get into a fight. And I think if you can go on to the autopilot and let the poet speak, that's when the brilliance comes out. It's when you start thinking about what you're writing that you second guess it.
I think that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And how do you do that? How do you make your the logical brain shut up? I mean, how do you do that?
I've just got myself trained at this point that I know every day I have to write at least two or three poems, and I pull up WordPress, I have a blank screen, and I just, whatever happens.
Now, how about you, Sarah? Do you have a routine or a way that you write more, or do they just seem to come to you when you're in a shower, which has happened to me before? Mm-hmm. It's awful because you have nothing to write with or anything in there,
Right. Poetry has always felt very organic to me, and it definitely comes naturally. Sometimes it just comes out as the kind of word vomit that needs shined up later, which is fine. But I think compared to prose, like with prose, I have to plan and organize and outline. But with poetry, I can definitely just sit there and let it come more organically. But then when I'm doing like a theme thing, I do a lot of historical horror, so I usually have like a ton of research, and that helps too to draw from all the ideas from the research.
I think that part sounds so fun. I think maybe I should pick a topic and do some research for the purposes of doing a poetry. That would be so much fun. Mm-hmm. I know that the times that I have had a destination in mind, something like in the anthology will come out, and I'll be like, well, that'd be cool. Let me whip up a poem for that. And those are fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, because I think they challenge me more, because it's always before the poems were just, pretty much a way to purge a bad feeling or something awful that's happened or something, but when you do it as an exercise, I think it's definitely a challenge, and you have to work at it more, I think. But they're mm-hmm. they're both really rewarding either way. Do you find that the same thing, that it's I guess my question would be, do you connect this more to the poems that you that it's almost like, not work really, but it's kind of like this is what I'm going to do, and you set out to do that. Do you feel that you connect more to the ones that your heart is just screaming for you to put these words on paper? They're different,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when you have that emotional charge, you can definitely write something that maybe you would be too afraid to write if you were thinking about it too much. Kind of like what Em said with your poetic mind versus your logic. So if your mind will let you kind of break down that inhibition and write something really raw, then you're probably going to create something pretty powerful.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Uncollected, Em, do you have a couple of poems to read for us?
I do. I've got two for you.
Yay!
Okay, the first one is to N. In your whimsical dream robes, bedazzled with infinite latticework to frame the edges of indefinable ache, you float off the ground in a state of flux between flight and feral, your sharp teeth, your indelible desire, draped across the hellmouth welling in my Vesuvius frame. If I could etch my name across your inner thighs, pen an ode to the soft flesh of corded muscle, with the nib of my tongue, would the stars fall one by one to drift across the night sky of heady need, pulled into your storm to punctuate the story of love, as told from me to you. That one's called Etch.
I like that. If I could send a meme right now that anybody would see, it would be like I'd be fanning myself and like fainting. I love that. That was great. if you were out on a date and you were to like recite your poetry to your date, she would just be at your mercy. I
Oh, that sounds horrible.
in a very non-creepy way. There we go.
Okay, that works. Are you ready for number two?
Definitely.
All right, this one is called Florist. I tend a flower garden of multi-hued anxieties, full-budded brooding with baby's breath depression on moon-dappled stems. The twinkling flickers of light, the sullen reminders of love's faded embrace as perfumed paralytics drift on the lonely breeze. I tend a flower garden that grows across the cemetery of my mind, where every interred corpse of puerile infatuation spins in 6-foot vivisections. A part-time florist with a penchant for killing the things he loves, my hooded eyes that hide an excess of absence in 2 blackened thumbs.
And you're done already. I could sit and I could listen to poetry forever, and which is weird because there was a long time that being that I wrote poetry, people would ask me, you know, who is your favorite poet or something like that, and I never really had an answer because for a long time it was just what I did. When I couldn't even tell anyone how awful, you know, or how awful I felt, I could write it down. And so I didn't really think of it as anything that I would ever share with anyone. And, I remember little by little, I had an author friend who I would send a poem here or there to, and she's like, you've got to let people see this. People would, you know, really resonate. This would resonate with them. And I started writing and started showing people, and they liked it. And I was like, wow, you know, they were definitely things that I just wrote. And it was like, you know, like I said before, when I got it down and it was done, I could walk away and whatever I was feeling kind of like stayed with it. And I was like, whew, I felt lighter, you know, and to know that people read it and maybe they can feel the same way or know that they're not, maybe know that they're not alone is, pretty cool for me. It is. When I put Dark Musings up, as a matter of fact, on the 8th, it turned 5 years old. That was so hard to believe. And I had this weird thing when I wrote it, is that I never went back and edited it. So I kind of, and that's a weird word, edited. Okay, anyway. But, however I penned it, that's how it stayed. And I kind of considered it grunge poetry, you know, because it wasn't prettied up or anything. And, because, you know, I had an editor for my, I think, the 3rd one. And I read it back now, and I remember how I wrote it. So when I read the edited version, I'm like, well, that's just not right. So I think that's kind of funny. But, that's, you know, one of the reasons that I wanted to have this awesome poetry show is because it's Dark Musings' birthday. And I had a narrator friend read a couple of poems for me because, you know, if I did it myself, I would read them all three in about 20 seconds and not take any breath.
Terrible.
I'd probably pass out and
at reading her own stuff. Absolutely.
If it makes you feel any better, time I do it, I tell myself, slow down.
She doesn't have that in a voice. Her voice says, go faster. And she's it's amazing observation on how fast somebody can actually talk under pressure. But towards the end, it's like, what are you saying? And, you know, she spoils her wonderful poetry by babbling.
It's true.
Well done for getting a professional to do this one, Xtina. Well done.
Yeah. I want to say before James pushes the button, her name is Becky Lane, and she's an amazing narrator, and I was really happy that she read these poems for me. But, this is a short excerpt from Dark Musings.
Where once was my heart? I'm lying here in a pool of gore. Blood slips through my fingers and falls to the floor. Short, shallow breaths is all I can breathe as I watch my attacker turn to leave. My eyes roll back in my head once or twice as I faintly recall how I begged for my life. I remember my scream that pierced the night air and the pain that was too much for one soul to bear. I see the blade as fall at the start now gapes a hole where once was my heart. He took it with him, no backward glance. The cold seeps in, and I haven't a chance. In pain, I lie here and hope death comes fast. But as I feared, it doesn't. It just lasts and lasts. The only sound left is the drops of my blood as they pool around me and I'm lost in the flood. This wound in my chest cannot be made whole. When he left me, he left with part of my soul. My eyes start to close and the pain subsides. It's just then I realize I have just died. Imprisoning me. This confusion is confusing me. Chaos breeding insanity. What is real and what is fake? How much madness can one take? In broad daylight, I see the North Star. I look right at you, but don't know who you are. I'm naming all the hairs on top of my head. Confusion ensues because I've named them all Fred. I roller skate in the living room on the carpeted floor. May sound a bit eccentric, but I'm never a bore. I play hopscotch on my bed late into the night with Little Bo Peep and Rainbow Bright. I try to sleep as the darkness falls, but I'm still standing against padded walls. I struggle and struggle against my restraints. He'll be coming soon. And it's almost too late. I gnaw at the straps, bang my head on the floor. Terror engulfs as I stare at the door. The locks fall away because I held the key. I've always been the one imprisoning me. Like a dog to its vomit. Sometimes I return to the darkness I left. It's a welcoming pain, and I'm never a guest. These walls are familiar, suffocatingly so. Why the fuck am I here? I don't even know. Like a dog to its vomit, as the good book tells, I greet my demons and set a spell. The air is thick, stale cigarettes and beer. I breathe through my mouth as I remember the fear. And that look in your eyes, was it the drink or the drugs? Your sickness makes me ill, and I brush off the bugs, real or imagined, who knows anymore. But they skitter around me, and I look blindly for the door. Why did I come here, and why can't I leave? But I sit with you still, till both of us bleed. Brand new cuts form, and ooze fresh blood. I just watch horrified at this man I once loved. He still looks like you, if I squint through the tears. But there's really no denying, you've been dead for years. So through the darkness and death and all your demons I befriend, I find your vomit once more, because this nightmare never ends.
The end.
That was wonderful.
Wow. What a great narrator she is. Oh, that was fantastic.
I know. I listen, and I'm like, I know those are my words, but they, you know, we hear them in our head differently and stuff. And I know that when I asked her to do this in the one poem, Imprisoning Me, that was, you know, how we talk about sometimes, you know, when we start writing, we're never really sure what's going to end up. And the ending to that one, you know, because, you know, here you have this girl and you think someone's after her, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, what's going on? And then, you know, the locks fall away because I held the key. I've always been the one imprisoning me. So like when she, you know, when she did it and she did the, you know, she did it right. I was like, oh God, it was so amazing. So, yeah, I thought that was really, really cool and really amazing. And, I have to say that knowing that we were playing that, you know, on the air and, I was a little nauseous. I was like, oh my God, you know, cause it's one thing. I don't know. I think we had an author on the show. I can't remember who it was, James. And they were talking about, do you ever feel like an imposter? You know, do you ever feel like, you know?
Yes.
Like, oh, I'm sure.
Well, isn't
yeah,
that isn't
yeah,
actually a thing? It's called imposter syndrome. But a lot of people, certainly in the arts, you know, people who become successful, you know, they feel it. And you know, I've had I've been to like book signings with anthologies, and I went to a launch of one of my own books at a bookstore back in the good old days. And you do, and people say, can you sign this? And what you just paid $15 for the book. Why do you want me just scribbling it and ruin it? I mean, and it is that. Why do you want my name in that? That's just
yeah.
Spoiler.
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
It is a difficult. Likewise, hearing your stuff, you know, when I hear my books being narrated, and it's just like, it is a peculiar feeling. It's like, I don't deserve it, you know.
Yes. It's like, you know, I you know, we had M reading some of his poetry, and I have three of his books, I think, on my shelf, and they're just amazing. And you know, we have Sarah, and she's a Bram Stoker nominated. And I'm like, that is so cool. You know, I mean, and then, you know.
Oh, Sarah,
this is
where she's going to sucker you into sending her your book.
Yes.
I knew it was coming.
I would love to trade paperbacks with you. So when you make it out though, Sarah, it's XTINA. And
we knew it was coming.
No.
But you know, and then we play, you know, some of Dark Musings, and I'm just like, oh my God, it's gonna end, and it's gonna be silence, and they're gonna be like, oh yeah,
oh,
like,
wonderful.
Oh, thank you. But it's like, you know, like we're talking about, though, it just feels like, you know, I'm not real. You know, I'm just, because I think maybe it's because when I started writing, it was like, you know, just as a way to purge. And so I'm like, you know, I never really, you know, I have my aunt, like I say, she's my biggest fan. She's like, you know, you need to write a novel. That's where the money's at. And, you know, I'm like, well, if it were that simple, you know, like poetry. And I have to admit, when I was younger, that is, I, you know, people would say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I'd say Stephen King. And, you know, so poetry was actually not even, you know, it was something I never even, you know, I would never even have claimed to be a poet or anything. But I think now that I'm a little bit older, you know, I'm proud to say I write poetry, and that's it's my baby. So, I'm just so excited you guys are here tonight and we're talking poetry. And so speaking of that, what are you working on now, Sarah?
So right now we have our virtual StokerCon coming in like a week and a half. So I've been recording panels for that. And we also just announced a new anthology call. I'll be editing. This will be the second anthology I've edited. This one's just for the women in horror. It's called Chromophobia. And I'll be looking for short stories inspired by colors. So creepy colors is basically what I'll be looking for.
Creepy colors. I like it. I like you. Yeah. Looking for poetry at all?
We're just doing short stories for this one, but yeah. I wish there was some poetry.
Right. What about you, Em? What are you working on?
Oh, God, everything. The new Cerberus book is being worked on, but poetry-wise, besides the chapbooks that just came out, I've got Uninhibited is coming out in India sometime soon. I don't have an exact date. And then
awesome.
Unrequited will be out in August.
I saw the cover for that. And that's so amazing. I mean, I still, now when, somebody will tag me on Facebook that, you know, they have my book on their shelf or something, I'm just like, that is so cool. I'm like, it's one of my babies out in the world. And you know, India, holy cow, that's amazing. One day, maybe they'll be reading me in India, but no, that's so cool. I can imagine how that would feel. Yeah. You should be really proud.
Maybe. Wow. I'm not sure yet.
No, you should be. It's great. It's a huge thing. It's great.
Being translated is amazing.
Yeah. I wonder how well it translates. You know, I got to ask this question of the poets. You know, when we, I took, some college courses and had to, of course, read the greats and the classics, and you're always trying to decipher them and figure out what were they really saying. Well, you know, when you read my stuff, I'm saying exactly what it sounds like. You ever think that, you know, in like 100 years from now, somebody's going to read your stuff and try to figure out what you were really saying when you were really saying what you said? Like, there's no hidden meaning in here, you know? So I sometimes think, are they looking back as ghosts and being like, oh, I meant exactly what I fucking wrote.
Probably.
Right. You know, we're trying to find a deeper meaning. And I'm like, you know, what you see is what you get. So, but I have been told that that's kind of what people like about my poetry is it's, you know, real and there's not any, that's so funny. We had, one of the prompts recently in the group that I belong to, it could have been the blackout poetry. I can't remember, but it was, I came up with this really interesting poem. Now, you know, I look back on it and I read it and I'm like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But I feel like, you know, people will read that and go, wow, that's deep. And I'm like, not really, but it sounds kind of deep. I know, like, together it just sounded really pretty amazing, but it just really wasn't. So,
The idea that someone's going to read it and they have their own interpretation.
I definitely. That's cool if that happens. But, you know, another thing I find interesting is the poems that I think are, you know, oh, this one is my strongest poem. This one is great. And people pass by that one and they go to another one and they're like, oh, this one's amazing. And you're like, really? That's the one you like? You know, it wasn't one that really, I don't know. I had that happen. I think it was for Dark Musings. And, you know, so many people pointed out this one specific poem. And for me, you know, it definitely wasn't, one of my favorites. And I'm like, you know, the ones that are my favorite doesn't seem to be really special to them. And that's weird. But then I suppose, you know, everybody's different and they all have their own, you know, what they like. And that's cool. But it is interesting to find which ones are other people's favorites, you know, and it's definitely different from my favorite. Do you feel the same way?
I think so. I was recently in a book club. I was a guest on a book club. They're not based in Los Angeles, but they read my novella and they read a novella by Haley Piper. So Haley and I were there listening to the book club, like, dissect our work. So it was really cool to hear all their different interpretations. And those were our novellas. So with poetry, it's just even more so. Like, people just have such different reactions and interpretations. And it's amazing to listen to how readers can interpret something so differently.
It's very true. I was involved with a poetry anthology a couple of years ago, and I think there were six poets, and we kind of put our heads together and, you know, had different, you know, it was a really cool collection, but they would, you know, we'd all submit our poems into, you know, the group, and then they would pretty much pick it apart. And I don't know about you guys, but that's like, oh my gosh, I was, you know, the one girl, she's like, I think you can go deeper on this one. And I think, you know, and, you know, there was a part of me that was like, screw you, this, you know, and of course I would never say that. But I mean, I'm like, you know, no, this is, so it's not easy. It's not easy to take criticism. Do you, have you ever found that for yourself? Either one? Sarah,
well,
am I the only one?
No, it's just you. I went to an MFA program, so that was like all we did was give each other feedback.
Gosh.
So I'm so used to it that it doesn't. I welcome it. Like I'll take constructive feedback. If someone's being an ass, then you know they're being an ass. But constructive feedback is so valuable to strengthen your craft, I think.
Yeah, I think after I got over the how dare you, I did start to think about it and try to, you know, try to take the yeah, definitely. It's not
hard, yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. But I hate this. I think we are just about out of time for our show, and I'm very sad because I should have made it longer and we could just talk about poetry all night long. That would have been fun, but I didn't, so... you have to promise that you'll come back, Sarah. And I mean, I'll ask M too, but he's gonna, because he just, you know, I say come back and he's like, okay. So, you know.
This is like my sixth time now.
Right. So I think that we have that on tape, James. Sarah said she would come back, so she can't go back on that now.
Yeah.
Definitely. Legally binding now.
Yes, yes. But I thank you both so much for coming on the show and celebrating poetry with me, and I can't wait to have you guys back.
Congrats on the
thank
birthday
you so
of the
much.
Book and your new title.
Yeah.
Our new cover.
Happy,
thank
happy
you.
Book birthday.
Thank you.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, guys.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm waving.
Okay. 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 And we will speak to you both again. And it is. It is time. I'm rushing things along. It is time. Time has beaten us again. So it's time to say goodnight, Christina.
Goodnight, Christina.
Goodnight.